inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It just was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Aloha, welcome to Stargate of the Cosmos, and I'm your host, Janet Kara Lesson, with my co-host, Dr. Sasha Alec Lesson, and my producer is the world-famous Thomas Becker, and today we have Kevin Briggs, and I'm getting a lot of background noise. If somebody could just mute their mic for a moment, that'd be great. Okay, so let me try to do this short bio. Kevin J. Briggs is an author and specializes in consciousness and the connection to ETs and UFOs. His recently published book is titled Spiritual Consciousness, A Personal Journey, and covers 56 years of his experiences of ET contact and UFO connections. Kevin speaks to many groups of UFO and ET enthusiasts. They are always eager to hear of his interactions. He always receives a warm reception. Kevin has written articles which have been published in the Truth magazine, and his published book was also mentioned in Psychic News UK in their editor's Goodreads section. So basically, I interviewed Kevin the other days. He has these incredible experiences with 8 major ETs, and we're going to talk about that. Dr. Lesson, you want to say hi before I bring in Kevin? And are you getting this background noise? Sasha, are you there?
Your
are you getting the background noise?
Your voice is, it sounds very tinny, honey. It doesn't sound
okay, I'm going to hang up and call back in. You take over until I get back on. Go ahead. I'm going to hang up and call back in.
Okay. Okay. That's cool. Hey, Kevin, you know what's really cool?
What's up?
It's like if you thought about the critical incidents in your, you know, long line of experiences, you know, which are the 3 outstanding ones that, you know, meant a big difference in your evolution and into where you are now. That would be, what's the highlights?
Yeah.
I would say, well, first of all,
here comes the boss.
My 7th experiences.
Can you hear me clearly?
Again. Go ahead, Kevin.
Okay, yeah, well, first of all,
hang up again and come back in. Yeah, we've got a bad connection. Keep going.
Okay, you say, first of all, I'd like to thank you for inviting me on your show. It is a great privilege for me. So, and I do enjoy talking about my experiences over the past 56, 57 years now, I think. So, and I've had many. It's been a continual education, as I call it. And in answer to Sasha's question in relation to what were the three major events, I suppose, I would say the first one, probably when Orton D, the two ETs, materialised in my bathroom when I was 8 years old. I was frightened to death by it, as you can imagine, being an eight-year-old boy in a bathroom on his own, and two beings appeared to my right-hand side. They were speaking telepathically to one another, which I could understand. They were both very attractive beings, human-looking. They had long, blonde, shoulder-length hair. As I say, very attractive, square jaws, wearing tight-fitting, like a blue jumpsuit. But they were speaking about me, not to me. And I remember part of the conversation briefly. As I say, I was terrified at the time. But I remember it was Dee that was questioning Ort. Those are the names. The male is called Ort and the female is called Dee. And Dee was questioning Ort and she said to him, is this the boy? And Ort said, yes, it is. And then she questioned him again, said, are you sure this is a boy? He said, yes, I am. He said, well, look at him. He's small. He's frightened by our presence and he's uneducated. And Ort said that I will educate him. I will guide him. I will teach him. And there was some other conversation in that, but I don't recall it all. And he was true to his word. Both have been in touch and educated me about consciousness itself over the past 57 years now. So that will probably be a main theme because that was probably one of the first.
Let me just ask, when you were, what was your height relative to them? Were they adults, humans, size, or you know, what was your relative height?
Full-size humans. I would say around about 5'10 to 6 feet, probably, maybe a little taller, but I didn't get the opinion that they were excessively tall. They were slightly elevated off the floor by about a foot, probably, and they looked normal human size to me. At the time, I thought they were my spiritual guides. That was my belief system at the time, that we have spiritual guides. I was brought up as a Christian, and my understanding that we have these guides. So I rationalized it by thinking that that's who they were. I was incorrect in that, as I learned over the years, but that's how I rationalized it as a child. And I know when I was so frightened, I was
That was too big a hint. Did they really turn out to be your spiritual guides after all?
Right. Okay. They tell me who they are and what they are. They are Arcturians. They are from Andromeda, and they are both guides and teachers, and they are a married couple. We don't tend to think of these, our extraterrestrials or higher conscious beings, being married and having normal lives like we have. And they did inform me that I was part of their extended family, the only difference being my physical's in the third dimension at a lower vibrational frequency, where they lived on the fifth dimension, which was a higher vibrational frequency. So that would lead me to believe that I know now that we are interdimensional beings, and I am probably on the lower scale of the family, as it were, down at the bottom in the third dimension. So I do know who they are. So yes, in response to, yes, they are spiritual beings, as we are. You know, I am a spiritual being, I have a physical, and I have a spiritual side to me. And they are exactly the same. So correct in one respect that they are my spiritual guides, but they're also from a different dimension and from a different star system. Does that make sense?
I do. Yes, I do indeed understand that they are spiritual and that it's two ways and that you too are spiritual. And I'm guessing, what is the reciprocity? What was in it for them? What did they get out of educating you what did you give them? That's what it really comes down to.
Well, I didn't give them anything at all up until a couple of years ago Orton D, and bearing in mind I've had contact with them all my life, different modalities of contact as well, but the education was mainly about consciousness itself. And I was introduced mm-hmm. to another group of eight beings when I was 14, and I still keep in contact with those eight beings now. But they didn't ask anything from me at all until a couple of years ago. Art and D materialized in my bedroom once again, and I'd just been to the bathroom. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning. I got back into bed. I was about to snuggle down. There was a bright light outside the window. The light came into the bedroom. The bedroom lit up like a myriad of butterflies. That's how I describe it. And then Art and D materialized at the bottom of the bed. After pleasantries, I asked what was the reason for the visit, and they said, "Kevin, we want you to talk about our interactions with you, and we want you to write a book." As in fact, they said, "You will write two books." I said, "Well, I don't mind talking about my interactions with you, but I'm not a writer." And Art said, "We will continue to guide you, we will continue to teach you, and we will give you some information to include in the book," which he did. And that was the first time, and that was only a couple of years ago. The book only came out last year, April, May time. And that's the only time they've asked me to do anything. And I felt at the time they'd shared so much knowledge and information with me, and I felt quite privileged. And I hadn't spoken about it to anybody other than my brother and my wife, who I mentioned it to when I was considering asking her to marry me. So she didn't think I was delusional. So in answer to the question, that's the only time they've ever asked anything from me. They are now asking a lot more of me, which I'm continuing to work towards what they're asking me.
Okay, can I play a hypothesis by you? Did you give them adoration and appreciation and stuff that felt good to them?
No, I don't think I did, to be quite honest. Sorry, go on.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, I was just like a sponge, really. I was happy that they were part of my extended family. I was happy that they were my spirit guides. And as a young boy, I thought we all had these guides. And it was perfectly normal to me, perfectly normal. So, and I still enjoy the interaction today. And the amount of information they give me about consciousness itself is tremendous, really.
So what did they tell you about consciousness?
Well, I wouldn't know where to start, really. I would have to probably start at the beginning of my journey in relation to consciousness itself. When I was 3 years old, we had my mother engaged a photographer to come and take some photographs for the family album. And I was 3 at the time. My brother's 18 months older. And we were duly washed, had his hair brushed, had a new cardigan that my mum had knitted. And the photographer came and lifted me up on the table. And it was a drop leaf oak table. At that point, I had an advantage of an elevated position. Not just the height on the table, some 4 feet up or whatever the height was, as I looked around the room, I also understood that I was conscious, and I was conscious again in a physical. And that was my first recollection of being in a physical body a second time round, or however many times round it was, I'm not certain. I remember telling my wife that story many years ago, and she said, "Kevin, three-year-olds don't think and use words like consciousness, and they clearly do not understand it." But I did, and that's why I tell the story. So that was the beginning of my initial understanding of consciousness itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I got older, interaction till I was 8, and that's when the Art and D both materialized in the bathroom. And as I said, slightly elevated off the floor, as I described them, long blonde shoulder length hair, talking telepathically to one another, which I could understand. So really the first stage will be when I was 3, but that was like self. I already had an awareness of consciousness. And at 8,
so what did that mean to you, to be conscious. What did that mean? You were just aware of yourself as a...
I was aware that there was two parts to me.
That you were eternal?
I was aware of the physical, and I was aware of the spiritual side, which is the consciousness itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I got to...
Okay, so we were 3 and 8. Okay, next one.
Okay. I didn't have any more interaction after that. I did tell my mother when she came into the bathroom, and she said it was just my imagination. I was frightened, as I had mentioned, and I was so frightened I didn't get out of the bathroom. Oh.
Listen, I've got to tell you,
intellects,
our way, we have amazing intellects. Once it goes in, you can't not know what you know. You're doing it, man.
Right.
That's correct. I understand that now, yes, I do understand that.
We're coming up on a break in 1 minute here, and music will be any second.
Okay.
So I just want to tell our listeners we're going to be back in about 5 minutes, and we're going to cover about how the ETs are going to contact us and when, and the message you got, and other stories. So think about that.
Okay.
And where's the music? Where's the music? The music should be here. Anyway, what anything do you want to cover in particular in the second half? Kevin?
Me, myself? I have a couple of things. I've got plenty of stories I can convey to you with, and each has a little message in it, as to say, it's as I was shown it, and that's how they taught me, just by a simple experience.
Okay, so when we come back, we will be covering all the stories, and I don't know why our music's not here, but things are a little bit screwed.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exopolitics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda.
Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths. And because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio. Oh, and you don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Aloha and welcome back to Stargate to the Cosmos on Revolution Radio. And I'm your host, Jenna Carolison, with Dr. Sasha Alec-Lesson, our producer, Thomas Becker, also known as a Mad Painter, and our special guest, Kevin Briggs. But before we get back to our show, I'd like to remind you to please go over to the donation button on revolution.radio and make your donation. And we really do appreciate whatever you donate because we really need your donations. And a Mad Painter, Thomas Becker, where are we in our fundraising this week?
We got $276, and we still need $2,274. So we need quite a bit.
Yeah, come on down. Okay, now, Dr. Lesson, are you back? Hi, sweetheart.
Oh, I'm back, and we are looking. Yes, can you hear me, Janet? Janet,
yes,
can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
excellent.
I can
excellent.
Hear you. Can you hear me?
That's wonderful.
Can we hear you?
Oh, it's great. How wonderful it is when your wife can hear you. Okay, so what we're really talking with Kevin is, like we have some real powerful friends, Andromedans, who have some things they want us to know, and they've chosen, as nearly as I can tell, they've chosen Kevin to be the one to – for you people who are listening now to get it, and just pass it on. So here we go.
Yeah, this second half, I'd like to hear more of your good stories. See, I love the – I know there's a lot of ETs out there, and some of them had, you know, some bad reps. But I know – I interact with the good ETs for the most part. And I – yeah, Kevin, there's no reptilians. Are you – have you engaged with any reptilians? I bet some nice reptilians.
All my contact has been very positive, right, from being a child. Mm-hmm. I've never had any negative – any negative contact – and I've never, I only recently met a reptilian, very, very recently, about 6-7 weeks ago. And that's the first one I have ever met.
Wow.
So I've never met one of those at all.
What was that like?
Well, when you met the reptilian? It depicted the look, well, a bit like a big lizard, I suppose. But he wasn't aggressive. He was a bit more forthright, a bit more stern, shall we say. But he was interested in who I was, really. I think that's what he is. But I could sense that he was obviously empathic, telepathic, very intelligent beings. So whether he'll mm-hmm. come back and speak to me again or not, I don't know. I didn't get his name. I didn't get any information about him at all. It was just a very brief visit. The only time I had some interaction that was a little bit... I've been traveling on the astral plane just purely for pleasure on this time, and I was on my way back, and I accidentally, I don't know how I did it, I landed in a small craft. It was a commercial craft delivering ores and things to the moon. And as I dropped in the back seat of the pilot area of this craft, the two greys looked back at me, both looked at me and said to one another telepathically, "What is he doing here?" And I looked at both of them, and I apologized. I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be here, it was accidental," and I left. I then came back home, and I came back into my body. But then I was greeted by a big grey, and he told me in no uncertain terms not to interfere. I'd never seen him before, but he was saying that I wasn't to interfere with this craft and the pilots and things. So that's the only negative thing I've ever had. And he was quite a tall grey. He seemed to be in between the two that I know. Targ was the taller one and Zant the smaller one. He seemed to be in the middle of those two, but with a much larger head. But he was very... I got the impression he was like a police force, like a military man responsible for security, and he was telling me off. And that's the only negative thing I've ever had. So
he's telling you off.
But, yeah,
got a good scolding.
Just a passing encounter. If I want, I can continue on if you want. I met Ra again.
Yeah, go ahead.
The lead counsel.
Oh, yes.
Again, when I was 32. And on this occasion, I was a police officer in England, and I'd done a couple of double shifts where we finish late in the evening, and then we have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go and do another shift. So it's like two shifts with about 5 hours sleep between. So always very tiring when you come home at 2:30 the following day. And so on those occasions, I used to go to bed for a couple of hours until my wife came home about 5 o'clock. On this occasion, I'd just take my couple of dogs out first, and then got upstairs into the bedroom, got undressed, got into bed. And as I got into bed, a small shadow person came through the bedroom door. And he actually looked straight at me and beckoned me. Now, I'm used to seeing shadow people. It's been explained to me that they are precursors to a message. And they actually live between dimensions. Higher conscious beings use them sometimes for conveying messages and attracting attention. And on this occasion, he actually looked me directly in the eye. Normally, you see them disappearing around the sofa or a piece of furniture, but he was clearly attracting my attention. And I told him I was tired to come back later. I wasn't interested. So he left. He went out through the door again, which was closed. And he came back a short while later and beckoned me again. And I said, "Look, I've already told you I'm tired. Leave me alone. Come back later. I'll see you later on this afternoon or this evening, but I'm too tired." Anyway, he was persistent, and he came back a third time. So I said, "Look, you're so persistent. You obviously want to show me something. I'll get up and see what it is." So he went through the door, which was closed. I got up. I didn't get dressed. I opened the door, and there was a beam of light from the floor to the ceiling on the landing. Now, I describe this beam of light as if you've seen the Star Trek programs when they beam down to the surface, you get this beam of sparkly light from the floor to the ceiling. It was just like that. And my thought was, well, you've gone to all this trouble to get me here. So I stepped into the light. And as soon as I stepped into it, I got this feeling of euphoria. And I was no longer tired, and this feeling of euphoria was unbelievable. And then this voice said to me, I am your father, you are your father's son. Now that confused me for quite a few years. And then the light remained for a little bit longer, and then it disappeared equally from the floor and the ceiling and disappeared in the centre of my stomach. And as I say, I was then a feeling of euphoria. I wasn't tired anymore. I got dressed. I took the dogs out again. And then my wife came home about 5 o'clock. I told her about the experience, and we actually went out that evening, which was unusual because on these double quick changeovers, I was used to be extremely tired. So, but I found out later that was actually Ra. And initially, I thought it was my deceased father, but I found out later it was Ra. I still don't fully understand the message that he gave me, although he has given me a bit more information, but I'm not prepared to share that at this moment in time. So that's another occasion when I've met him. I have met him.
Wait.
How did you find out?
Say it again. Please say it again slowly so we can think of what was the message. Say that again slow.
Okay. The message he said was, I am your father, you are your father's son. So my assumption was it was my deceased son. It was my deceased father. I think he might be referring to, I'm not certain, that he may consider, I only got the information that they've given me. I try not to put my own interpretations on them because then I'm diluting the information, really. So I've got my own understanding of what he meant by that, but it's not something that I could really share, really, I don't think. So I just have to accept it for what it was. Perhaps I'll find out later.
We'll give you some information here. Go ahead, sweetheart. What were you going to tell him about Marduk's son?
No, I was nothing. I wasn't going to say anything about that. I don't want to guide you. I want you to when you say you don't want to put your imagination or interpretation on something. From my perspective, that means that you've done that because you couldn't make that utterance unless you did. And it was wise of you to keep it private as long as you want. But it's impossible to imagine something without, or to not imagine something without experiencing it.
Yes, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. but so I may put it in my book when I'm writing the second book at the moment. We'll see. I might put it in there, but I have met with him since then, and I was giving a talk a few months ago in Orlando to a small group, about 30 people, about the book. And when I was giving the talk, one of the ladies there, Betty, she's got psychic abilities. She said, "Kevin, who's that big?" And she described him, that big tall man with the beard and the curly hair, and he had his hands in a specific configuration, and she was describing Ra. She said, "Well, he was stood behind you all the time you were giving your talk." And at that time, I hadn't described Ra to anybody. And especially with his hand configuration, that was again confirmation, you know, that he wanted me to do the talk about the book and mention about the Council of Eight. And those are confirmations that I keep receiving, you know, so that's very good.
So what we've been getting through our other informants is that Ra has indeed embraced assisting us and is wholeheartedly on the side of humanity. That's what we've been getting.
Yes, that's what I understand, and he will help us. If I need his help, I ask him, and he will help me, which is very good.
Now, how did you find out that it was Ra?
I asked him, and he told me it was him.
Oh, you asked him?
Yeah, I asked him, and he told me that it was him. And I asked him some other questions, but I still don't have a fully definitive answer, shall we say, that I'm currently happy with. So if I can get further with that, I will do, and I'll share that with you.
Thank you.
I tell you, I can tell you a story about, I was traveling on the astral plane. I've done that since I was a child. They taught me how to do that. But I used to just do it for pleasure. And on one occasion, I was traveling on the astral plane and a conscious craft came next to me. And there were two beings on board. It was Ort and Dee. I went on to the craft and they said that they had a message for somebody. Could I convey this message? And when I went through the skin of the craft, I noticed that the craft was actually conscious in nature. And then the two beings inside Ort and Dee showed themselves as pure conscious energy orbs. Again, 4 to 6 inches in diameter, orangey, yellowy, slightly vibrating. And we spoke telepathically to one another. They gave me the message and I said I would convey the message. And I said to them, I said, I see you two as pure conscious energy orbs. Let me see if I understand this correctly. Here we are traveling on the astral plane. Myself as a human, you as Arcturians, fifth dimensional, I'm third dimensional, and we're traveling on a conscious craft that you've created in this astral plane. And I said, how do you see me? They said, we see you exactly as you see us, as a pure conscious energy orb. So they, again, that was a way of teaching me that the astral plane can be used for travel, communication, and creation itself in relation to they created that conscious craft with this, which they traveled in. So fascinating stuff, really. And the message they gave me was for, I can probably mention his name now. I didn't before. I didn't put his name in the book because I hadn't asked him. I still haven't asked him. It was for a Dr. Stephen Greer. And what they said to me, Kevin, we'd like you to pass a message on to Dr. Stephen Greer, and we would like him to change his itinerary for a specific date. I can't remember the date without looking at my notes. And I asked them why, and he said because he was in some danger and he needed to change his itinerary for that date. So I said, yes, I would convey the message, and I duly left the craft. And then I was just about to leave, and I said, can I come back on board the craft? I said, yes. I said, I've got a question. And the question is, they'll want to know, or Dr. Stephen Greer will want to know who the message was from. And I said then, tell him it is the light beings. Now, that was the first time I'd heard that term, light beings, so it was new to me. So I said, yeah, no problems, I'll convey the message. So I left the craft, they duly flew off, and I went back to my body. And I woke up as I went back into my body. I got some paper. I wrote down the message so I wouldn't forget the time, the date, who it was for. And I went back to bed. I woke up the following morning about 8 o'clock. I looked at my note and I thought, there's no way I'm going to be conveying that message to somebody that I don't know. So I screwed it up and threw it in the trash bin. And I thought that was the end of that. The following evening, I was asleep. I wasn't traveling on the astral plane. Ort and Dee came into the dream and said, Kevin, it's very important that you pass this message on to Dr. Stephen Greer because he is in some danger. So then that gave me a moral dilemma when I woke up the following morning. And it was only about a week to this future date. So I had to decide if I contacted Dr. Stephen Greer, and I don't know who he is. I've never met him. I've never communicated with him. I am aware of some of his work, and I thought, well, if I tell him and he thinks I'm delusional or a lunatic, I can live with that, I have no problem. But if I don't tell him, and for some reason he comes to some harm or even dies on that day, I would never forgive myself. So I decided to convey the message, and what I normally do, I will ask for some information in relation to how am I going to contact a particular person. I turned on my computer and I went to the YouTube channel. And when I put his name in, and then the first picture that came up on the right-hand side at the top of the list was Dr. Stephen Greer at the Disclosure Project. And sat next to him was a guy called Gary Heseltine, who again I didn't know. But Gary Heseltine was a retired police officer. No, he wasn't at that time. He is now. He's retired. But he was a police officer in England in the same area that I was. So to me, that was a direct communication to contact him. So I got in contact with Gary Heseltine. I conveyed the message. He did convey it to Dr. Stephen Greer. I got a reply about an hour or so later thanking me, saying he would take it under consideration. He then sent another email with a picture of a light being that he had taken himself personally. So clearly it was just a way of communicating with him using consciousness, using astral travel, and using a conscious craft which they had created. Quite a few modalities of communication there. And I haven't been in touch mm-hmm. with Dr. Stephen Greer before or after. I've had no reason to. I did ask them why they asked me to give that message. And they said, we wanted to see if you would convey the message. So clearly it was a test for me. So whether he was in any danger or not, I don't know. But they certainly railroaded me into giving him the message using a moral argument.
From my perspective, you know, it's clearly would be interesting for you to talk to Stephen. He's really interesting to talk to.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is. Our paths have never crossed. I'm sure they will in the future, hopefully, but we'll wait and see.
Mm-hmm. I know you'll have a lot to say.
Yeah, you have a lot to share. I wanted to cover, on the other show we talked about, and this is a whole different audience, we talked about this contact that they're going to have, and I think it's going to be at the United Nations. So I have that correctly? It's been a lot of information between when we talked and the last time. Yes, could you tell us a little bit about that?
They have a mission for me, and the mission is that they're wanting to reveal themselves to our United Nations. And they've tried in the past to do this and been unsuccessful. So part of my mission is to help facilitate that. So in view of that, I actually contacted the United Nations myself and spoke to the office of Nicholas Headman. And I asked him if there was any protocol in place should the ETs wish to communicate with the United Nations. I did receive a reply from his office, and they said, no, there was no protocol in place at this moment in time. So I responded and asked them, how would we implement a protocol to this effect? And I did receive a reply, and they said you would have to get a member state to make a mandate proposal to that effect to the United Nations. So as a result of that, I contacted the then US ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, on their website. I didn't receive a reply. And I thought, well, that was the end of that. I've done all that they've asked me to do, and that's all that I can do. I remember Sunday morning, not so long after that, Ra actually woke me up and contacted me and said, Kevin, I want you to write to the President of the United States, Mr. Trump, and follow up with our message and to follow up with Nikki Haley in relation to the mandate proposal. So I thought that was quite a big tall order, really. And I thought about it for 2 weeks. And then I decided to do it because they'd asked me to do it. I drafted a letter and I mailed it on the 29th of July last year. And I remember the date because it was my wife's birthday. And I sent it certified mail, so I know that they did receive it. But I know there are others trying to work towards this. I've been in touch with different groups and individuals in relation to this mandate proposal, and they do inform me that it will only take place if there is a mandate protocol in place. But because there are so many people now knocking on the door of the United Nations, I'm hoping that we may be able to move forward with this. I did a talk just recently, an interview with Alfred Lambert-Mont Weber, and he informed me during that interview that there's a guy called Stanley Fullman who had all the same information that I had in 2010, I think, October 15, 2010. Mm-hmm. I'm not certain on that date. And on that date, the craft did appear over the United Nations, but there was no protocol in place at that time, so there was no meeting. So they're trying to take it one step further now, and that's what I'm working towards. So I'm sharing that with people. Hopefully it'll get out to people that have the influencers, the politicians, and those that are interested in moving forward. I know it's a very tall order, a very difficult task, but I can only do what they ask me.
Wasn't there someone in charge of extraterrestrial contact on at the UN? There was some kind of commission.
Is that the woman
you're talking about?
Yeah, I contacted Nicholas Hedman. He's the chairman of the Outer Space Affairs Committee. Anything to do with outer space affairs, legal or otherwise, he's the go-to man.
And he didn't contact you?
He responded twice. Yeah, he responded twice to tell me there wasn't
twice.
There wasn't. And he told me how to.
And he told you to get the information. Yeah.
Yeah, by a member state. So it doesn't have to be the US. I've thought about contacting other people, but I have to be careful not to transcend the boundaries that we have in view to legislation in relation to contacting other governments, you know. So I haven't done anything further with it.
Can you ask your committee to give you more information on how to do this?
I mean, we have brains that are fully functioning.
We just have these little brains.
Yes, uh-huh. I do.
What do they
I do
say?
I do get to a point and I say, I can't go any further. There's nothing else I can do. I've done as much as you've asked me to do. Unless you give me more information, then there's nothing else I can do. And then something will happen. Someone will contact me out of the blue, a bit like Alfred Lambermont Weber. And he has a 50,000 following on the YouTube. And I think about 5,000 people saw that. It's interesting that they do guide me to certain people, and the message is being put out there now. So, just like with your show, the message is getting out there. So, and I know there are other people and other individuals that have contacted the UN on the same issue. And I know a couple of groups, as the WCETC, yeah, the World Coalition for Extraterrestrial Contact, they're banging on the door.
You know, it's obvious that what would really solve this is if you would find a pocket nation that has United Nations status, but has a government that's sympathetic and willing to do this and share the glory of helping humanity.
Well, yes.
I know that about 12 years ago, MUFON had something, I can't remember what it was, but they found a country that would do that. And MUFON has the records to tell you which countries, there's several of them that are very small, smaller than Monaco even.
Oh, that's okay.
You know, multi-sized places. Ask Malta for one thing. And there might be some anyway.
Okay, well, that's something I can look into and see. As I say, I can tell you how they actually gave me the. I have got the time and date for the reveal now. I can explain that to you if you've got time, if you're interested in that.
Oh, yes. Uh huh.
Okay.
Tell us the time and date of the reveal. Okay.
They actually gave me the date. I asked them before in relation to what time and date for the reveal. And about a couple of years ago, they gave me a 2-year time scale, but wouldn't give me a time and date. This year, February the 1st, I'll just have a look at, I've got my notes here, I think. February the 1st, I was woken up by, it was a 1:11 a.m. So it's February the 1st, 1:11 a.m. So that's the synchronicity I get when they wake me up. And they woke me up with the loud noise of a craft directly above the house. That's what woke me up. So I got out of bed. They gave me the message in relation to, I think it's just the location. I'd have to check my notes now because I've got so much information. And so when they give me information, I will ask for confirmation, although I'd already got the time on the clock and February the 1st date. So I went into the bathroom, and adjacent to my bathroom is a street light. And I said, right, I repeated the location, and I said, what about the rest of the information, the date and the time? And I said, we will give you that later. I said, well, can you confirm the location by turning that street light off? And the street light went off immediately. So that was confirmation for me. Okay. So then I went back to bed, and I woke up at 7:45 by someone jumping on the bed. They jumped on the bed twice and woke me up. I thought it was my dog that had come into the bedroom. She's not allowed in the bedroom, but occasionally she might get in. But it wasn't her. She was still asleep in the hallway or wherever she was. And so I got up, and they gave me the second part of the information, which was the time and the actual date. So I've now got the location, the time and the date. So I repeated that back to them. And bearing in mind, it's now completely daylight. It's 7:45 in the morning. And I said, right, I repeated it back to them. Can you confirm this is correct by turning that street light on? And the street light came on immediately. So that was my confirmation. So I'm comfortable with the information that I've been given. We now just have to keep working towards the this reveal. And then about 3 or 4 days later, again, I don't know the exact time, I'd have to look at my notes, they gave me 8 people that they wanted me to pass the time and date and location of the reveal, which I have done. So they have that information now. I had a meeting with the 2 or 3 of the group and an email. I contacted them all by email, and I only got 4 replies. So I'm hoping they all received it. But there are now 8 people, who are prominent people in this field, as it were, who have the time, date, and location. But it was decided by this small group not to publish the time, date, and location at this moment in time. So we're going to keep that for a later date. But the fact that 8 people know about it is a good thing.
Yeah, it's good to have that written record.
I think it's insurance for myself, hopefully.
That's right. But also what you're doing is you've modeled a method of validating your otherworldly or other dimensional experiences by setting up a back and forth communication to confirm. I think that's very, very great methodology for anyone that's having paranormal experiences of any kind to be able to create that. You've modeled it. Thank you.
Yes.
They showed me a way they were going to reveal, but not a time and date.
Okay.
And one night I had to download all night, and then there was a day in between where nothing, and then part 2 was the next day.
Right.
And they were going to have a craft over every single place where there's population in a grid so that there was no place in the world that you wouldn't see a craft, and they have enough craft to do that.
That's amazing.
And they were just going to do it simultaneously, so disclosure would be everywhere, and
everywhere,
no one would
be
able to doubt.
Yeah, well, they do say...
Did they reveal the method?
Yes, I would agree with that. They have told me it will be global when they do have this reveal, but I must stress that they do want to do it through our government representatives. That's very important to them. So it still shows that the government have control over these things, and because it will be a huge transition, and we need to keep some semblance of order and work together, because it's going to change humanity, as they said. I think they said
absolutely. But then there's also there's also the fact that if some military isn't intelligent and fire upon them, it just complicates things. Everybody, I think that government acceptance is really important. I understand that.
It is, yes. And this has given them the opportunity. I know they've been hiding the information for over 70 years or more. This gives them a loophole to get out of it. If, you know, I'm not a great believer in some of the politicians we have. I mean, some want to do some good, but the majority don't seem to. But there must be some that have the power and ability to help us move forward with this.
So what they showed was that they were just going to do this with average people. So you have the... Your people are telling you they're going to do it with the governments. My group said we're going to do it with the people because the people are just as important as the governments.
They are.
And that
was
in 2016 because of it, by the end, it was released in November. So I had, and it was interesting, it was February. I remember it was February 2016. I had these 2 nights of these downloads, and then, by later that year, in November, Arrival came out. And that, if you remember, had, I don't know, like a dozen ships, to big motherships that appeared over major locations. So I went, wow, that's like beyond coincidence, because they would have already been working on the film
in February of 2016 to have it released by November. So I'm hoping they just reveal it to everybody, because I don't think we don't need our governments controlling the narrative anymore. You know.
Well, no,
we're not babies. Santa Claus.
Yeah, the population is as important as the politicians. They're supposed to be there by the rule of the people, but in some countries, I think they've just taken over. So we'll wait and see. There are many working towards this, and I must express I'm just a small piece of a jigsaw in a very large jigsaw. There's people been working on this for 10, 20, 30, even longer years. And as I say, I'm just a small piece in a very large jigsaw. But part of my mission also is to bring the different groups together under one umbrella. I'm not quite sure whether I can do that or not. And again, it's another lofty task. But I've been in contact with some groups, and I am making some headway. So we'll see how that. And I know there are many others out there who are well known within the field, and we're all working towards the same goal, and hopefully this is the time to achieve it, really.
Okay, go ahead, Jen. I'm so sorry. You didn't get a chance.
Well, then we'll go back and forth with that little invisible talking stick. So when they arrive, I think we discussed it. I was asking if it was going to be in 2020. I'm getting a real strong feeling. A lot of the things involving ETs are intense emotional feelings and like psychic intuition, that it'll be 2020. But
okay. Well, I can share that with you. Yeah, it will be next year. Yes.
Yes.
But I can't even give us a month. until this group of eight of people that have the dates, when they're in agreement, then we can release the dates. But I can say it's in 2020, so that gives us plenty of time to get to these specific dates. And if I can get permission from these group of people, I will hopefully get my book out before and publish the times and dates location in the book. That's what I'm trying to achieve at the moment.
Okay, so what's the names of your first book and your second book, and what's the difference going to be the first book between
two? Okay, my first book is called Spiritual Consciousness, A Personal Journey. And the second book, I haven't decided on the title yet.
Okay.
I'm about halfway through, probably. And I'm going to include, a couple of years ago, I channeled Oort. Completely by accident, I had a group of friends around at my home and we were meditating, and Melanie said to, has anybody got any contact? And everybody said no. And then Melanie said to me, Kevin, have you got any contact? I said, no, none at all. And she said, are you sure? I said, well, there's a male stood next to me. And she said, well, who is it? I said, I don't know. So she said, well, ask him. So I asked who it was. And the answer came through me, he spoke through me. And he actually spoke for about 30, 40 minutes. And at the end of that, I was totally exhausted, completely surprised. And I'd never even thought about channeling or anything like that. But now I've been doing it for a couple of years with this small group, and I'm going to include those channeling experiences in the book. I've now got permission from this small group to include that in the book. So the
wonderful
the messages that they have, I think I'm about 80 pages of messages from them. So that'll be included in the book. So I need to get it sorted and get it published. I've got a publisher that phoned me up a few weeks ago and said he would like to publish my second book. I don't know who told him I was writing one, but I'm going to go with
it. Oh, he probably listened to one of the recordings.
Probably listening to the show, yeah. Yeah, you never know.
Never know. Go ahead, Sash, your turn.
Well, it's just like I'm sort of put together is in the two-window experiment where you have the wave or particle, depending on your consciousness affecting it, setting cameras in front of it changed what happened before then too. So what you're doing is not just changing what the future is, but we'll look back at this time and it'll be certainly clear, that you've changed, the whole timeline.
But, well, but that's,
you're doing with clarity. Yes.
That's a possibility. I did channel Ra last year at the Free Foundation in Miami at their conference, and he described the how the reveal would take place in great detail, really. So that the information is out there, and I think I put that. It's on YouTube. If you put my name in there, Kevin Briggs Free Conference in Miami, it comes up. It's about 20 minutes or so, and it's Ra channeling through me. He asked to do that, Ray and Andy's allowed me to be do a talk down there, and Dr. Melanie Barton, she introduced me. She was one of the small group that we used to meet regularly at my home and meditate and speak with the Council of Eight and make notes of the what they are proposing.
You wow. sent me three links. So one was the free, and I can't find it now. I'm going to.
Okay, one is the
yeah.
In fact, I think I put all three now on my website if you want to go on there. And my website is www.kevinjamesbriggs.com. All three are on there now. I'll put them on there. The day that you and I spoke, Janet, so I don't think there was a coincidence there.
Yes.
I was asked by the Council of Eight to put the information out there, and I have done now. So yeah, you can go onto YouTube and find it there. I think there's a channel of art I did at a CE5 group in Tampa, and that's about 20 minutes again, I think. But
yeah, I found you and Alfred.
Okay.
The free conference. What was the third one?
I think the third one you put.
Yeah,
Kevin Briggs' channel, and I think it's the date of when it was done, 8/12/18, I think, of last year.
Okay, so I'm going to put these links onto my site so people can click through. I have a page, everybody, on AquarianRadio.com with some pictures of Kevin, and I will have the links to his interviews with Alfred and the free conference.
I like the photographs.
You can get this plan at home.
Yeah, I made photographs that you made there. They're all very, very close, except for Ra himself. But all the others were just about spot on. It was quite good to see them as a group there, as I have seen them, you know. So it was quite amazing. I think the other thing with Chica, he didn't have those long, flexible wrists or arms and things, but everything else about him was the same. And the others were very, very good. Yeah, excellent. So
I know when you're talking about the curly beard. I combined one with Ra with the curly beard. Yeah.
After I got your email this morning, I Googled Anunnaki, and about six or seven drawings came up, or photographs, and there's one on there that is a spit and image of him, but it shows him with some wings. I don't see him with wings, but I'm not sure whether Betty did when she saw him, but that was the closest I would get.
What the wings mean in usually is that this person has the ability to fly, to fly. It doesn't mean that he has wings.
Oh, okay. Necessarily. Okay, symbolic.
He said he has flight is among his attributes that he commands.
Okay. Yeah, that's very interesting. So, yeah, that will be a spitting image of him then, even if you leave the wings in there. Yeah, very good is that. So,
I'll try to find that.
Yeah. You'll recognize it when you see him from my description. And I'll say when Betty saw him stood behind me, in fact, I'm seeing Betty on Thursday, I'll ask her if he had the wings on when she saw him. That will be interesting to find out, yeah. So, it's all coming together now, I think. And, I do appreciate you having me on your show. It helps get there. We're all working together towards this. And as I say, it's...
Absolutely. We all are feeling up the elephant of reality and getting what a big elephant it is.
Yeah.
From different angles.
And I know Ra did say in his channel to me at the Miami conference that he wanted to co-create with us the reveal, sharing our consciousness and we as humans and the ETs with the shared consciousness would co-create the reveal itself. I think that's what he said. But they're clearly working very hard from their side to get us to this higher level of understanding of consciousness and the integration yes. with the... And I must state that they have stressed with me that the ETs themselves are not the main issue here. The main issue or message is to learn about consciousness, to learn about shared consciousness, not just with our fellow humans and plants and trees and animals, but with the extended galactic societies. And once we understand that, and the ETs are only here to assist us in that education. So that's the main message that I've been given.
Mm-hmm. So we have about 15 minutes or so, maybe between 10 and 15.
Okay.
What other are the most important stories you want to share?
Most important ones. Let me think now then. I think really now the important thing is to get the message out. I have been asked by R&D to go to certain conferences and speak about these things, and I am doing, and I'm surprised at the interest in the subject in just over a year since the book came out. I've been all over the place. In fact, I'm going to the Contact and Consciousness Conference on July the 18th to the 22nd, I think it is, in South Dakota. It was scheduled for May, but it's been rescheduled now. And there's some interesting speakers there. I can't remember exactly who they are now without the menu thing with me, but I don't have it. So, But yeah, it's just really just the message. It's the whole message, really. And I think the different examples that they've given me is to explain at whatever stage that we are as individuals, you may be able to identify with one of these stories that I've encountered along my 57 years. And I think that they have asked me to do it now because I'm at an age where I can stand the ridicule that comes with these things and the name calling possibly, it doesn't bother me. But if I'd have tried to do this when I was younger and still working, I would have been ridiculed. And I don't think the time was right. And right. I say again, there are many, many people working towards this. It's huge, really. Yeah. It's absolutely huge.
Kevin, I have a burning question that I really would like to, because you're a Brit, I really like to know, is like, what do they think about Britain leaving the European Union? I got to tell you, from my perspective, it's crazy to stop a union that was there to stop wars. What made the British people leave, and what can we do about this?
Well, there are two sides to every camp, as you know, I'm sure. And I find that most of my friends now want to leave. They think that it's a huge amount of money that we put into the union there, and we don't get very much back. But it's just a political thing where the politicians change the ideas and think they're doing something good or bad. And we don't know whether the results are good or bad until history tells us sometime in the future, as it were. So, but it's about 50-50 with the people I talk to. 50 want to stay in and 50% want to leave. So, but you're going to get that with any political decision, I think. So, but it's certainly disruptive over there. But I don't know what the outcome is, and nobody seems to know what the outcome's going to be. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Wow. Thank you.
Wow. So are you all ready to go with your presentation? Do you have your PowerPoint and things?
I haven't got a PowerPoint yet. I was just talking to Sandy about PowerPoints. What I was going to do was just talk about my book and then do a channel of art. Art has asked me he would like to channel to the group. So I'm going to do that for. So what I will do, I think the last time I did it, Alan Steinfeld was there, and I didn't go as a speaker, but while I was there, Art said he would like to address the group. So I spoke with the organizer, Mia, and she said, well, you better speak to Alan Steinfeld, that's his field. So I spoke with Alan, and he said he would introduce me after his talk, and I was able to do a channel for about 15, 20 minutes. But this time I've been asked back as a speaker, and I've got about an hour now, so I'm going to ask the attendees there for questions and then get Alan to, hopefully Alan will oblige, I'm sure he will, to do the meditation first. It allows me to reach that higher level of consciousness, and then he will ask the questions that will have come from the audience. So I don't really need a PowerPoint, but I've been asked to do others, so I need to. I'm a bit of a technophobe, Janet. I've got to move with the times, you know. I've got to move with the times. So I'm comfortable with talking to people. I've done that all my life, as it were, and comfortable with presentations. It's just the technology side of it. I've got to speed up my learning process. So.
Well, if we ever get together somewhere, I'll show you how to do it.
Oh, okay.
Or actually. Yeah, I could help you. I could even help you long distance.
I'm sure it's fairly straightforward.
You don't once really need it.
Yeah. I mean, I could do it the old-fashioned way and get some slides together, do a slide projector. But, I mean, but yeah, you've got to move with the time.
PowerPoint is so easy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
PowerPoint's so easy. We could show you. Sasha plays with it every day. It's very easy. So,
okay.
We'll teach you offline. We'll help you.
Yeah, I had a look at it yesterday online to see what you had to do. It didn't look too complicated, so hopefully
It's kind of interesting if you get a chance to give people a mini experience themselves to see what they, in, you know, a 5 or 6 minute or 20 minute or little meditation, what they channel. I think that would make a very lively.
Well, I have been, you did mention earlier about sharing the group of eight with others. I've been meeting with a group of four of us here over the past 2 years, and we've been meditating, and then I've been channeling. And the group of four now are now channeling with the Council of Eight themselves. So we've extended that where they channel once a week with the Council of Eight. That's an amazing thing, really. So so it's moving forward, really. So
well, very important because people want to have contact with these. You know, that's disclosure, right? And so people want to have contact. See, I channel too. But
oh,
I'm
not
brave like you that I've done it in public like you do. But you know, when I get in a groove and I connect, now you have Ra that talks through you and
It's mainly Art. He's the one that materialized me back through when I was eight. But then I have channeled Ra a couple of times, and Ra wanted to speak to the conference in Miami last year. And you'll see that there's a tremendous amount, I'm sure you know if you do channel yourself, there's a tremendous amount of energy there. I know on one occasion we measured the air temperature immediately around me when I was doing a channel, and the room ambient temperature was 77 degrees, and the air temperature immediately around me was 10 degrees higher. And that's the energy that's coming through, the conscious energy. In fact, if you look at the Miami talk, I stand up there. Once I start doing the channel, I start sweating profusely. And again, that's the energy that Ra uses in relation to the communication. So,
The other day I had a big download, and I came out and talked with Sasha, and I was still downloading. So he was noticing me reveal, and so he went and put his hand above my head. He says, "Yeah, it's warm.
You can feel the heat." Yeah.
So that'd be interesting. Feel the heat. Yeah, maybe during your presentation, you could invite somebody up here. Feel the heat.
Yeah, probably. Well, I know so Alan was sat it. Next to me last time. Alan Steinfeld was sat about three chairs away from me at the front after he'd introduced me. And he said, "Kevin, I could feel the energy emanating from you as the channel was speaking." And I say that was some distance, about three seats away. So, but how did you get into channeling then, Janet? Did it just happen like that? Did you plan it or?
No, I've always seen ETs and ghosts. And so at one point I was doing a tantric practice, the meditation, like a meditation. Mm. And I got my energy up high and I said, this one wants to come through. So I usually get like a tap on the shoulder.
Oh, okay.
And Sasha will say, "Okay, who, you know, go ahead. Who wants to talk?" And I always say, I protect myself. No dark entities are allowed to come through me. I don't want to channel dark entity. So if it's light conscious being, Sasha will facilitate and they'll come through, and then I'll, at some point I'll say, well, go ahead and ask me questions. And then that, you know, continues the dialogue. But I've never been brave enough to record it like you do. You know, you're inspiring me. Perhaps I will. But my main person that comes through me is Nima. Mm-hmm. But I've had Enki, I've had Inanna, I've had Nigashita, Toth, and, you know, I'm really connected.
Oh, quite a few then.
I'm an Anunnaki person. Like, you're... Yeah, you're Andromedan. So I think our soul essence originates maybe on another planet for some people, and then we come down here. And this is a full-on experience. We are human. We're in a human avatar.
Yeah.
But, you know, our soul essence is, you know, connected to our family. So my family is Anunnaki. So I get really offended when people say, all the Anunnaki are evil. It's like, no, they're just like, things are complicated.
I'm sure, yes.
You know? Yeah.
I have found, though, since I've been... go on. Cool.
I was going to say, maybe we'll be on a panel together and we'll go, okay, this one will come through and that one will come through, and we'll channel all these people and have a big conversation with the council.
What we'll do, we will, between our small group, we'll get about 10 to 15 questions, and then we record it, and then one person would ask the questions, and then we record the answers. So it followed on each month when we did this, once a month, you know, so...
Does your voice change?
Yes, tremendously.
Your channeling, is it a different voice?
Totally different. Totally different demeanor as well. And I don't always. Do you remember what they say? I don't always remember. I just remember little bits of it, but I don't remember the whole thing.
Well, that's why it's good that you're recording it, because we've never recorded mine, audio or visual. So, well, bravo for you. Oh, that's the end of our show. Wow.
Oh my God, that was quick.
That was awesome.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you.
We'd love to have you.
Okay, we'll speak again, I'm sure.
We will. A lot of blessings. Aloha. Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Okay.
Bye bye. Aloha.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Executive Officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a civil majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
more... Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
Look, what?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible!
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs!
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
The blood is filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not, the heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. The neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination. causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio!
The original machine had a base plate of prefamulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a